After all this, you still...
I still want that gas, yes. And you had better deliver.
Welcome back to Greenhouse Gaslighting. Thank you so much for your patience, and thanks again for everyone who's provided their feedback, followed us, given us a like. I want to thank our guest from episode 4, Matt Christman, at Kushbaum on Twitter, for the follow. Once again, you're always an inspiration, and this is the cosign that I needed. We are committed to podcast excellence here. We got the podcast chair, we got the podcast mic, and eventually I will have a better computer. A little more good news. I just joined DSA, and I recommend you do too. There's been a lot of criticism lately about, oh, should you join an organization, or whether some of the candidates DSA has put up in office are delivering, and that's all well and good, but we need people. We need people talking to each other, and that was my push to do it, and I think that's the push I want to give to you to join DSA. Joining me for today's episode, my first supporter, my first subscriber, love of my life, Sky.
Ooh, yeah.
You gonna say hi?
I didn't know what else to do. I'm sorry. I'm awkward.
Well, hey, Sky.
Hi.
And hello. Returning today, we have Master of Public Administration and Precinct Delegate Tyler Fox.
Yo, yo. Loving the energy. I'm very excited to be back. And I love DSA. Love that you joined. Great plug. 10 out of 10.
Hell yeah, dude. So, the sense I've been getting as of late when it comes to events and some of the goings on is the oft-repeated expression, time is a flat circle. Now, mathematician friends may disagree with that, but it's looking to me like the Biden playbook is indeed an effort to replay the first Obama term, and if he gets a second term, maybe to play it again. And it's looking like the relief bill, at least as I understand it, you know, when it came to his game day push, it was $2,000 checks guaranteed. That was even part of the sell in Georgia. And even the gradual push for a $15 minimum wage was something that seemed to be coming from the president's mouth. And with the bill passing as it has, the sense I get as a viewer is that no one was really committed to fighting for this, save for Bernie Sanders and probably the few others who tried to promise as much as they could. So, Tyler, Sky, what's your read on this?
Well, so here's my thing. I think we're in a situation where there is good, there is bad, and there is the ugly. And I think the whole parts of this process and getting this relief bill passed that have bothered me the most have been the situation with the parliamentarian. I think that is obnoxious. You know, it's one of those things where I've served on other boards and I've been aware of parliamentarians, and I think the situation with the parliamentarian just shows how archaic the whole setup in the Senate is. Like, I will never understand a system where someone that we don't get to elect gets to make a call that ultimately determines what our minimum wage is in our country. Like, that's crazy, right? Like, you say that to anybody who doesn't live in America, they'd be like, what the hell are you talking about?
Right, and it's interesting because isn't the parliamentarian not only someone who's unelected, but is kind of just there for general guidance, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, as far as I know, Democrats tend to say that, oh, well, we believe in respecting the norms and rules of our institutions. Yep. But in those rules and norms, sometimes, you know, you're allowed to do what you want as a rule and a norm, and Republicans love taking advantage of that. They've taken advantage of the filibuster. They've taken advantage of telling the parliamentarian, how about fuck you. And then when it comes to Biden, who doesn't have a mandate per se, but is in a position where a lot of people weren't excited for him, but may have been relieved to not deal with Trump anymore. I feel like he's on the hook still. He still has a lot to deliver. And even though that this bill does promise some recourse, it's paltry compared to what was promised. And it's paltry compared to what people really need right now.
Yeah, it's basically nothing. It's basically just saying, here goes $1,400 and maybe you should shut the fuck up. And maybe you will pay a bill. Maybe you will pay your rent. Maybe you'll be able to live for 3 seconds and then have to go through this again when they're trying to push another bill that's going to take 6 months for anything to fucking happen.
Yeah, and also the thing that I find suspicious is how much means testing went into the stimulus. So I think we can already talk about how I think that point has been hammered home about how it went from 2,000 to 1,400. But the amount of means testing that's gone into the checks, where it's now like, what, you can only make 75,000 to qualify for it? And that was based on income data from last year. And this was the year that most people were either
in. This is from 2019.
So 2019. And like, that's the thing. Over the pandemic, people's employments have changed drastically. Like, I mean, you know, not everyone's like me where I was lucky enough to keep my employment. A lot of people either went into precarity or had to shift into contract employment or were furloughed or, I mean, for the worst affected, lost their jobs. And you're going to means test them out of an income because, oh, you made $85,000 last year, but now, you know, you're making nothing. And even then, of the people that make that income, not everyone gets a W-2 for their work. Some people are contractors. Some people work labor. Some people make more of their money off of tips, things like people like hairstylists and things like that. Yeah. And it, to me, I think the biggest factor affecting this is just how out of touch national leadership seems to be with the man on the street.
Yeah, no, you know, my mind immediately flashes to that liberal argument of, oh, why would we give Jeff Bezos' kids free college or free healthcare? Because like means testing, it's like it's a really nice thing to say, like when you're campaigning. But like in practice, all that it ends up doing is just sabotaging these programs that should have been universal so that they had universal support and they can exist. But then you cut it off. I mean, I had a coworker who mentioned something to the effect of that they weren't even that excited about getting a check because they make, I mean, granted, they probably don't need as much money. I know this person, but they're not even getting that much. And I'm like, oh, great. Like that's somebody who's probably going to go and not really, I know the goal of the stimulus bill shouldn't be like, oh, we got to get to vote in more Democrats and whatnot. But it's definitely a self-sabotage there because you just end up turning these people who otherwise might have been interested in supporting Democrats, leftists, whatever, based on a stimulus bill. They're just not going to be interested in that anymore. And they're going to say, oh, the stimulus bill wasn't even helpful for me. Oh, I'm going to vote that down or I'm going to whatever. You know, it just it feels like we're running in circles because that's the same thing that's happened with college, with healthcare, where it's like, if you don't guarantee it for everybody, there's always going to be that group that's trying to sabotage it and destroy it.
My thing is like, why can't we give Jeff Bezos' kids fucking healthcare and free college and everything? Like, why do we have to frame it as there's going to be a few people who can benefit and won't need this and everything? Why does if it have to be that and you're absolutely ignoring the people who really need it? And the 75 like thousand, okay, you think that the person who's making 75K and the person who's making $0 because of whatever, they all deserve a 1400 check. But the people who make over the 75K, they can get half of that. And then if they make over the 90K, then you get zero. So you're saying though, people who meet zero should get the same as the people who will get 75,000.
Yep.
And it's like, this is not equity. This is not actually helping everyone like it's supposedly due.
See, and you know, that's such a good point. I think the thing with the stimulus package is that it kind of became a conversation of just the checks, when honestly, the things that I'm the most excited about, because I do think there's some good in this bill, and the things that I think are good don't even center around the checks. Like the way that the news and media and everything is framed, it's like we're only talking about the one-time checks, but you know, there are other aspects of this bill that I think were really good. For example, I've seen that they're dumping a bunch of money into schools so that they can actually like have PPE and stuff to like, instead of just opening everything all at once and infecting everybody, like it's actually going to be possible that they open it safely mm-hmm. now. The relief for restaurants. My mother works for a restaurant that I know has been struggling, and they couldn't even benefit from the Trump PPE stuff. Because, like, remember all those big businesses took the PPE in that first round. So the little business couldn't even get it. So the plans that they have specifically aimed at helping food service is exciting to me. But that's not what's talked about. That's not, like, the sexy stuff, I guess. So that's not what the news is really
pushing. Well, none of the people in the Senate are sexy. I'll be fucking honest. I mean, Bernie, love him to death, but, you know. None of this is supposed to be sexy because this is life and death. Life and death is not sexy. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And I just, it's so frustrating to see that you had people like Manchin who were making like, just splitting hairs over it.
And dear God, I mean, the way Democrats have hide behind Manchin and hide behind now Kristen Sinema. And I know I'm late to the party on this one, but I'm still pissed that Sinema shows up in an anime girl outfit and does a little curtsy and the thumbs down.
Oh, no, you can't have money.
And again, this is just like my little pet project beef, right? But it's just toxic feminism, right? Or toxic femininity, as some people have joked about, right? Is literally as soon as she did it, and everyone is like, do you know how, like the outrage on Twitter is born of the sentiment of like, well, these guys are clearly out of touch. And immediately someone from her staff was like, it's sexist to speak about how she voted. And I'm like, I don't think so, because if a man did it, well, I mean, just think about it. Think about how the media does this. Because they have it in for Bernie Sanders, and I don't need to get too deep into it. It's the fact. If Bernie Sanders did it, do you think they would let him live it down? Do you think they let him go back to Vermont after doing that? They wouldn't. They wouldn't. And again, already. It's just Kristen Sinema does all this LGBTCIA behaviors for for what? Like to basically deny people a much needed minimum wage hike. And then Joe Manchin for that reason too. Like it's astounding to look at like how he acts on the campaign trail. Because he's shown up to pro-life and like pro-abortion events on the same day. It doesn't add up who this man is. And the way everyone is like, well, we have to get Joe Manchin on board. Why? As a party, why do you need him?
You don't need to get him on board. You need to get him out of fucking office. And that's what the shit is.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And there's a ton of people in West Virginia. West Virginia is producing some very interesting progressives lately. And like, you could just draft one of them.
Are you aware of Paula Jean?
Paula Jean Swearingen? Yeah.
Swearingen? I know I'm butchering that last name. Swearingen?
Man, it used to be either a time way. White people had easy names. Now I don't get it.
Well, how she got her start, because, in 2020 she was up against, what's her name? The Joe Manchin's opposite. I'm finding it.
Yeah.
Bottom of the list, West Virginia.
Yeah, because the other guy the other senator is a Republican, right?
Shelley Moore Capito. Yes, she's a Republican. And Paula Jean.
Oh, dude, you cut out, man.
He ended up making it to the general against. It's just so unfortunate. Like, you know, it's because Trump was on the ballot, so Republicans were just like turning out in droves. But I think, sadly, she lost pretty badly. And how she got her start is she started by trying to primary Manchin back in, I think it would have been 18. Yeah, based on the math, 18. I would love to see her take off. There's a lot about her policies that I like, and I ended up in a couple different social media stuff, and I gave her money. But I wish that she had done better the one time that she made it through to the general. That is pretty depressing.
Yeah, yeah, and I unfortunately don't know enough about West Virginia politics to really comment on that, but...
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people kind of talking about Joe Manchin and putting him in the context of... And it's hard to argue with this point, I will say. If Joe Manchin did not have that seat, which is a seat that, like, no Democrat should have. Like, there's not a single governor, House rep, other senators, like, not a single position in that state is Democrat. And, like, literally the only thing to like about the guy is the fact that we would have Majority Leader Mitch McConnell if he wasn't there. And it just sucks because that gives him, like, this weird free pass to just kneecap everything that Democrats are trying to do. Because, oh, if I wasn't here, it'd be Mitch McConnell in charge. And it's like, oh, Lord.
Right, and just, you know, and all he gets for it is to, you know, make sure that his big pharma CEO daughter can have another heated swimming pool. And it's just, it's disgusting the level of wealth inequality that these guys have been able to create in their home states. But, you know, coming back to the point of why Democrats keep hiding behind them, like, in a parliamentary model, this could never happen. Because they could just oust him the minute he misbehaved.
Yep, absolutely. Honestly, I think the Senate, I see very, very few arguments as to why the Senate should still exist. right? I mean,
I would like to see to one think, of those arguments.
Honestly, yeah. Because, like, I'm from, we're from Michigan, and when it comes to the Senate, you know, the only people our state have sent to the Senate are Peters and Stabenow.
Right.
So who the fuck is Joe Manchin? Like, we got no say in him, who he is. Kristen Sinema is another good example. I believe both the Delaware senators, if I remember correctly, voted down the 15. There was 8 of them. But yeah, it's like, I chose none of you people. Why do you get to decide whether or not I get a good minimum wage or not? Like, who are you?
Yeah, and again, if you look back at the founding principles behind the Senate, I mean, it was intended to be an entirely anti-democratic institution. And even with, you know, how we popularly elect senators now, it's still... It has a ratcheting effect on progress. And that's something that either, you know, Democrats or the left... independent of Democrats has to work to correct, or it is, you know, as you say, something that just needs to be abolished. Now, granted, the House of Representatives is not any better, but it is more democratic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think in a weird way, what happened to MTG, I will never say her full name.
Magic the Gathering?
Magic the Gathering. I think what happened to Magic the Gathering is a great example of the type of thing that I wish Democrats would do to senators who kind of refuse to get in line. I mean, don't get me wrong, Chuck Schumer's the majority leader now, so I'm not saying that everyone should have to, you know, bend over backwards for Chuck fucking Schumer.
Well, no one should have to.
It is unfortunate. Exactly. It is unfortunate that there aren't any, like, stronger enforcement mechanisms that Democrats are willing to use on those, like, one or two senators who won't go along with what the rest of them have decided.
Well, and that's the thing is, you know, you can either rack your brain about, well, why won't the Democrats do it? And then there's the kind of, like, the kind of doomed approach that some people take, which is that, well, if they wanted to act on it, they would. And that's, there might be some truth to that, I feel like, because when it comes to the most hostile and cold-blooded takeouts that the Democratic Party has employed, it has always been deployed to people of their left or the left of the establishment. And you can talk about, you know, on the national scale, the treatment of Bernie Sanders. You can talk in local races about who was that guy, Alex Morse in Massachusetts?
Oh, God.
Who they basically did a stitch up where he was again. Where he was falsely accused of sexual assault, and we all knew it was bullshit. And then it turned out it was some Democratic Party interns who were so desperate for, like, a congressional internship that they did it. You know what I mean? Or even, like, the kind of ways that like the Democratic Party has said that vendors who give their services to anti-establishment candidates either need to charge them more or need to, like, you know, refuse to do business with them. And it's like, well, okay, we, at least me and you have worked on Democratic campaigns before, and like, without
the blacklist, I forgot.
Yeah, the blacklist. Yeah, any vendor who worked
so long ago.
Yeah, and it's just like, these are the things that like never make it to the front page. But like, if you think about it, these are practices that get employed, and these are structural impediments for leftists to run. And when a leftist does make it, like AOC, like Rashida Tlaib, like Ilhan Omar,
Nina Turner,
so many other people. Oh, Nina Turner.
Fingers crossed, Nina Turner.
I hope she gets it. She deserves the seat, and I really hope that the effects of institutional creep don't get onto her, because I think what's happened is, like, when you become a Democrat and you just get caught in the dying religion that it is, you have to drink the Kool-Aid a little bit. And like, I feel like, at least, you know, as an onlooker, and I don't really know what pressures they're under. If you look at some of the rhetoric AOC used when she first got into office and when she got back now, again, people would say, well, isn't she a liberal equivalent of MTG? First of all, she's not a, you know, I hope she's not liberal. But her goal isn't to, you know, spread hate or to really just stir shit up because she has resentment-based politics. The goal was to really challenge a structurally unequal and just structurally hegemonic system that needs reform at the bare minimum. Yeah. And her, you know, she came in with a very vicious bite that was very effective. And it's softened. It's softened in a way that's very concerning.
Well, so full disclosure, I still, honestly, the whole squad thing, I love all of them. At this point, my means testing, bring it back to that for a Democrat, is if you support Medicare for all, if you support public funding of elections, and if you support free college, pretty much that's all it takes for me to be like, oh, you're amazing. And also they back that up. They don't just say it.
Right.
Oh, the Green New Deal. Sorry, I have four of them. Green New Deal is the fourth one.
Yeah.
The real squad.
But yeah, so I'm such a, I'll admit, I'm such a huge fan of all of them still. Because, every time that they come under attack, like the squad, my mind immediately jumps to the Pelosi speaker vote, right?
Oh, the hold the vote thing?
Didn't everybody get super angry at them because they just approved Pelosi?
Well, here's the thing about the hold the vote thing is that, at least in my read of it, and I think everyone has had a cynical read of what went down, especially because it was mostly Twitter drama. And yes. I know I spent the first three episodes saying, get off social media, get off social media. And here I am just having an unnecessarily and yet incomplete encyclopedic knowledge of what happened. But to me, what it sounded like is just, you know, if you asked, hey, if we just remind Pelosi that, you know, we need this, and this is what we need, and we're willing to, you know, inflict a little pain to remind you that, like, you can't just get elected and call it a day. You need to deliver something for your base. Otherwise, you're going to lose them. It needs to be done, or at the very least, it needs to be spoken about. And I think there was so much opposition to that even being mentioned that I think it just got people upset. And again, I think a lot of it, the reason why it turned, the discussion itself soured people is because it was turning into like, is AOC a good or bad person? I personally don't care what she believes in her heart. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because
it's how she votes when she's there.
Right. And especially like as leftists, like if you choose that your praxis is going to be getting elected as a socialist or as a socialist within the Democratic Party, what have you, you become an instrument at that point. And how you, as an instrument, you deliver, that's really the rubric you should be graded against. I don't really care if she's a good or bad person. It's more of, you know, can she deliver? And I buy that there's significant pressures they're under. I buy that institutional creep is not easy to avoid. But it is concerning.
Yes.
And let me clarify. By concerning, I don't mean that, like, oh, you know, I'm concerned about that. It's more like it makes me consider is the electoral route the one we should be pouring all our energy into? That's what I meant.
That is such an interesting discussion, because you've posed that question a couple times. And to be honest, I always feel like I come up with a slightly different answer every time I think about it. Because to me, it's this weird thing where, like, yes, technically, so let's just say that you're arguing that focusing on elections is the most important thing, right?
Yeah.
You could say, like, okay, take Mitch McConnell. You've got the whole state of Kentucky. Literally every single person gets mad at him, right? Let's say they all go to his house. They all protest. They're all storming around outside. There's nothing stopping him from just locking his window, locking his gates, drawing his blinds, and then going and voting however the fuck he wants for the next 6 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he won the election. So there is an argument, like, yes, the election is what's important in that scenario,
mm-hmm.
right? But then put it into a different frame where you've got, with some more local elections, more local people, you've got people buckling under protests. You've got, you know, cities making some concessions, not enough, not nearly enough yet. But with the protests, you've got a couple of different examples of more local people who are actually affected by the protests buckling and giving in to what the protesters are requesting. So in that situation, it's the protests that are more important than the election. So I think it's a scale, and I think that there are situations that the protests are definitely what the left should be focusing on. And then I think there are also situations where we focus on the elections. And I think the difference might be, like, how local the government is, but, you know, there's room for conversation there. But it's such an interesting question to consider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, it just goes back to that old adage of, well, isn't all politics local?
Yeah, I get that. I think that's why all the House reps are just crazy at this point. I mean, I don't know if you've seen a couple of videos of Republicans when they, you know, were quote unquote debating the American Rescue Plan thing. But them just going nuts, bringing up Dr. Seuss, bringing up like Pepe Le Pew. It's like, sir, we are debating a bailout and you're bringing up Dr. Seuss.
Which, again, I don't fucking know what's going on with the Dr. Seuss stuff. And to be perfectly honest.
Oh, I can explain it.
Well, to be perfectly honest, I don't give a shit. But,
True.
What is it that Dr. Seuss, as a man in the 1920s, was a little racist and wrote some things that didn't get published?
Oh, yeah.
No, it did get published.
They did get published. That's the issue. He, at one point, I'm pretty sure he says something to the effect of putting a person in a turban in a zoo. Like, it literally is just super...
Yeah, like, people who looked like monkeys.
Yeah.
Oh, Christ.
Like, stuff. A man who was literally yellow, and you could see because there was, like, a horn or something that was yellow, and he was the exact same shade, and he had lines for his eyes, and he was carrying a bowl of rice with his little chopsticks.
Yep. And the way that the right has kind of hijacked that whole situation is making it sound like there was some mob of angry liberals who, like, stormed Dr. Seuss's office, you know, pissed on his grave, blah, blah, blah. When really what happened is that on, I think it was like the 25th anniversary of his passing, or I'm not sure what milestone it was commemorating, the company just announced that they were going to pull the books. And it was after a bunch of teachers from across the country were, like, writing them and cutting them out of curriculums. I mean, going out of their way, like, being activists, quite honestly. And, like, eventually the company just decided, okay, this is the time to pull these. We're not going to publish them anymore. Incredibly civil situation where the company made a willing choice to, like, do this. But then Republicans and the right made it sound like literally, like, there was a storming of the Dr. Seuss building or whatever.
God, everything's getting stormed these days. The Capitol, the Dr. Seuss building, what isn't getting stormed? But I just it's reading to me like all the usual culture war drama that happens, where, like, something happens, it's corporate or neoliberal to a degree in nature, and, you know, a liberal says something out of touch about it, a conservative overreacts by being twice as much out of touch. And then it turns into another culture war hot potato. And that's kind of what prompts me to not pay attention. But I think the timing of it is very interesting, because as soon as they pass this stimulus, right, and people are beginning to talk about where it could be falling deficient, they brought in the culture war. Like, they press the culture war button anytime something isn't happening.
Yes, absolutely. And in a weird way, as, like, a leftist, I kind of... It sucks because, sadly, it is an effective argument with some people who aren't super engaged in, like, the ongoing conversation of the culture war, air quotes. But I always kind of feel a little good when, like, literally all that Republicans can fall back on is their same old culture war bullshit. Because that means that ultimately we're doing something correct. Like, you know, when all they've got is their random crazy nonsense that doesn't matter to anyone other than, like, an old white person. Like, it is nice when we take them down to that point where that is all that they have to stand on.
I think it's
maybe
just,
I'm just being optimistic.
And the shit with Dr. Seuss, like, it's Read Across America Month, and his birthday is in March. So, like, every year this is the, like, Dr. Seuss time. And it's just a normal thing that got told, like, oh, this is, we're pulling this off of our shelves, like, it's fucking, like, all berry cereal, and they're, like, throwing their hands up, being like, oh my god, I can't read this Dr. Seuss book, ah!
Dr. Seuss has been canceled!
And my favorite thing is seeing the one thing that's, like, cancel culture obviously doesn't exist, but, like, the most times I've ever seen anything being canceled has been, like, white middle-class suburban moms being like, no monster in the high schools, like, we need no Call of Duty because blah 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 blah, like, no. There's no culture cancel culture that isn't,
I mean, there's no culture in this country, let's start.
Yes.
There
but there's no cancel culture that isn't just white people being angry about something.
Well, so I'm gonna digress real quick, because the real place where I saw this starting is, like, I think the Clinton era, I think, where it was, like, Tipper Gore and, like, a bunch of, like, Democratic moms at that time. I mean, they had a couple Republicans in that group who were just concerned about suggestive themes in music. And that's where, like, the parental advisory stickers on music started happening. Mm-hmm. Was that era.
Oh,
and,
yep,
like,
yep.
Whether it was bands like NWA or metal music or what have you, that's where that shit started. And it was this, I'm just very concerned about what's going on. I think we need to ban this. Like, that's where it started to a degree. And then, like, the real, like, canceling as we understand it, I mean, this is Bush era stuff when, like, the Iraq War was going on, and someone said, I don't know, man, it's kind of sus what we're doing over there. And then everyone would just, you know, come red, white, and blue and start crying about how you've disrespected our troops and all the people that died.
You don't care about this country.
You don't care about America. And they hate New York so much. These people hate New York so much. And 9/11 happened in New York.
9/11, never forget. Like, oh, all of those people, like, 99% of those people who were affected were New Yorkers. But, like, it's okay. Yep. Make that your personality, caring about 9/11.
Well, you made it your personality because... God bless. Okay, so it's funny you say cancel culture as we currently understand it. Everything that I understand about cancel culture nowadays, like, don't get me wrong, is that I'm sure there are situations where this doesn't apply. But I just keep hearing cancel culture get yelled about whenever it's something that we can all kind of universally agree was pretty racist, sexist, what have you. And then it's the right, it's the Ben Shapiro's of the world who suddenly starts screaming about cancel culture. Like, again, I'm sure there are situations where cancel culture, I mean, there's something when everything can go too far. And who knows, maybe I'll get canceled after this podcast or something. But I just keep hearing, my gut reaction when I hear cancel culture is, oh, what did some old racist do that he's trying to get out of?
Right. Like, what kind of redemption arc is he trying to push?
Exactly.
So he can continue to make money, so he can continue to live in his heated pool and his fucking trash. Like, everything. It's so stupid.
Yeah.
It feels diseased in a sense to me, because, like, I think there is a genuine idea, but because there's a lack of class consciousness in this country,
Yep.
People want to say that they distrust rich people, and you know, on the right, that's manifested as QAnon. You know what I mean? But again, it's really QAnon is just their way of trying to justify how Trump hasn't done anything, and they've come up with this grand universe. That's QAnon for you. But
Trump did a lot more creation than like a D&D campaign.
The thing is Trump did a lot, and that's the thing that people lie about is he did so much during his 4 years. He just didn't do the things that he said he was going to do for the people. He did all of the things for his rich friends and like all of these other people who don't fucking matter and could just leave the country whenever the fuck they think it's just gone to shit. But he didn't end up doing like anything to help the middle class, anything to help the little filthy poor whites that voted for him that he sees as filthy and poor. Like it's
The funniest thing I've noticed at Trump rallies is that like he actually seems to be genuinely upset by the people who like him. Like they genuinely have an affection for him. And then I remember just this one thing where people were cheering like really loudly. And he was like, "Oh, you guys really enjoy shouting, don't you? Ooh, like it's just." Again, even he's out of touch to an extent, right? But again, honestly. I think when people complain about, as Matt Chrisman put it at one point, this is the same discussion that's been happening for the same amount of years by the same groups of people. When are we going to be done with it? Mm-hmm. And you know, to an extent, I feel like a lot of these conservatives who complain about getting canceled or they talk about cancellation like it's something that is more of a social ill than it is, you know, I think it's because they talk shit about the idea of cyberbullying and now are like, well, I need to invent a new term that isn't cyberbullying. And I will quote I will just quote Tyler the Creator in his seminal tweet: "How the fuck is cyberbullying real? Just log the fuck off."
Honestly, wasn't that Melania Trump's big thing?
Yeah, that was her.
She like, was logged off of everything, girl. Like, I don't care.
I wonder if she's still alive. Honestly. I hope so. Like, I hope she's alive and getting.
I want to see what I want to see the Q theories about Melania. But anyways,
there's ultimately a part of me that feels. There's a part of me that aches for Melania, but then is also like, oh, just go fuck yourself.
Right.
You're doing nothing to make your situation better or the country's situation better. But I mean, I guess I understand that, oh, she probably didn't know he was going to turn into a psychopath and try to run for president. But whatever. It's a day-long conversation alone.
Yeah, but. Yeah. And again, as I've said earlier, culture war tends to be a digression from real politics. We had two more topics about politics, and then we do have a culture war thing to get back into.
Yeah, so, please hit me.
One question I did have, and you did bring this up before we started recording, is what good did come of this stimulus package may have been Bernie Sanders' own handiwork. Yep. And I saw this it was a very interesting headline from CNN. Which was like, is Biden, or I'm paraphrasing, but is Biden starting to give concessions to Bernie? And I'm not sure what to make of that. What do you think is going on?
Well, first off, I guess it might be good to say the things that I personally think are the best parts of the American Rescue Plan. The stuff that I think will ultimately have a positive impact. And I sent you guys a link, but for anybody listening who wants to look it up, Bernie has tweeted a ton about good aspects of the American Rescue Plan, and a lot of them are very solid points. Specifically, I think the fact that we're giving people directly giving them money to help them who are struggling to pay for their people who are struggling to pay for their rent are just getting direct benefits, direct help with that, which is just crazy. I can't think of the time that a federal or state government has ever done that, like, period. Obviously, we know about the unemployment benefits. Where's the one I was really excited about? Oh, the cutting the childhood poverty in half. That one, that is a big thing for me personally. I think that is great. And I hope that it follows through and is successful in that goal.
Are you talking about the checks for the kids?
Yes. And I believe, because it's just part of a list that Bernie put out there. And from what I understand, the argument is that all of these direct benefits to regular people will pull the children out of poverty as it pulls the families out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's super exciting. I grew up pretty poor, so the idea that we can help get other people out of that is exciting to me.
I will say one of the things I don't like about that is there was so much gatekeeping when it came to $1,400 to people during a pandemic that no matter where you're at, you're been affected by coronavirus. But this is giving anyone with these children all of this. So Jeff Bezos' kids are gonna like get the $1,400. And it's just, it's the bullshit of like, you can't do this, but you can do that. And like, if someone like has a certain amount of kids, they're probably are making a little bit more than whatever, and they don't probably need it. And it's just like, this is where you should have had the income gap. This is where you should have like some really kind of filter. Looked at. Yeah, like, or maybe
like even, if they were going to means test that they should have done it here.
And like, or you should have do like the, maybe if you're making, I don't know. It's so stupid. And I think about this one person that I know that I despise, who has a lot of children, and he has like, adopted daughter from his first marriage and then two children from his first marriage, and his current wife has like two or three children, so like they have a five children household. These people
like $7,000.
Yeah, $7,000 on the top of them having their both their two house income, on top of getting child support from the other like family members, on top of just wanting to go on vacations without the kids and not even like taking care. You're giving these people who don't need it and this like sense of childhood poverty. These kids aren't in poverty. Like, these kids are living the dream. Like, other than their parents being fucking shitty, and like that's a different
thing.
Money doesn't help that. But it's, or it would be like you would give more money to the parents and the kids that are poorer. And you wouldn't give like everybody the same amount. Like, that's the stupidity of this. It's
there's where the scale match. Should have been.
Well, so here's my
absolutely.
Here's what I've been thinking, because I've been following this for a sec too. Is this idea was initially being floated around on the conservative end, right? And initially, like, some conservative some think tank was cooking this idea up that they wanted a means tested at first. And Marco Rubio and Mitt Romney were kind of the big pushers for this, but I'm not sure what Rubio's proposal was. I'm just sure it was stupid. But Romney was the one who started floating this idea, but it's just like, nah, fuck it. If you have a kid, let's send you a check. And, you know, at least like the way someone was talking about it before is I thought like, well, this is a great thing, right? Like, don't we want people to be able to take care of their kids? Isn't it like unfortunate that like, the question of childcare is not something that young couples can think about these days? And then I realized like that must be Romney's consideration in this, and that what do you mean a mean test at the legal level? Society does it for us. And the people who can have kids are probably the people who are more likely to be his constituents. You know what I'm saying?
And the religious people who will have a bajillion kids until their bodies fall apart. Because that's what God said, even though you have no means of, like, taking care of these children. But in the sense, wouldn't you give all of these people the money? Like, wouldn't every American get $1,400 every month because you're alive? That's like the, like, that's basically what you're giving this child, like, the... And it doesn't go to the children. It goes to the parents to use for the children. This doesn't go into some like special bank account so they can access it when they need to when they're adults. Like, this is so you can assume that the parents are going to take care of them with this, but that's not how necessarily life works, or parents work, or people who have children, I should say, work.
Yeah. No, I understand that completely. I think I'm going to pose a question to you guys, because I'm genuinely curious. Do you think this bill, and I know that this isn't the point of legislation, it's definitely not the point of a bailout, but I'm just curious what your thoughts are. Do you think this bill is going to help more or less Democrats win election in 2022?
In my opinion, this bill does nothing for them. Mostly because it was already in the works. It's already, like, people need coronavirus relief. Okay. But I think it's also, I don't know. They fuck themselves over every time. So they have, like, all of this time to do more shady shit that's going to get more people to be like, what the fuck is wrong with Democrats? And they're going to be fighting within the party, and just, there's going to be all of this petty shit. And our goal is to try to have like a want to vote for them still. But I don't think anyone, I don't think anyone who's like on the edge, or like who was a Republican and is thinking different, is like, wow, the Democrats got me this bill, I'm going to vote for them now. Like, no.
Yeah. That's
because I think
good
if
point.
They fought harder for it, and that's where, again, I think the question got lost of like, is Biden starting to give concessions to Bernie? I'm not sure I necessarily believe that yet.
I don't see that at all.
I don't see that at all yet.
If he did, that would make that Biden has respect for Bernie, and it's obviously that he didn't. Like, he doesn't, and there was no, obviously we don't know like what happened in the background, but there was an official like, hey, join my cabinet, I really appreciate the things you're trying to do for America. Like, that's how you know he doesn't give a fuck about Bernie. He doesn't give a fuck about the people who support Bernie, or the people who want to see the change that Bernie Sanders is saying that he wants.
Well, and again, it just goes to show that, like, with him picking Neera Tanden, even though she was withdrawn, right? Neera Tanden, the famous Bernie hater,
Lord.
The famous detester of progressives, you know what I mean?
And like, what was her position?
She was being nominated for, director of management and budget? Yeah, so basically the cabinet
Yeah,
Bernie is exactly. The budget chairman, right? So, and again, like, Bernie handled it with as much grace as he generally does. That's the generation he is, that you don't
did
say
you
things.
Did you see the ignorant slut comment?
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna put that clip in.
Oh my god.
Let me play the clip. I'm just gonna.
It's like, yeah.
Republicans. And I don't mind disagreements in policy. I think that's great. I love the dialectic. But the comments were personal. I mean, you call Senator Sanders everything but an ignorant slut.
That is not true.
why does Neera sound drunk?
I don't know.
She's at an AA meeting and they're just like, you call.
That's not true.
I'm also confused. What does he mean by the dialectic? Is he a Marxist? What's going on?
Oh, yeah, yes, but something about her tone made, when I watched this clip for the first time, I thought she was going to follow that up with, I did call him an ignorant slut. Here's the tweet right now.
Like, no, because they don't have balls. There's no balls.
That's sexist. Sky, that's sexist.
They don't have ovaries. Yeah. The audacity is not there. Like, it is thinking that you're the boss bitch to say that and then be like, that's not true. That's not true. Yes, bitch, it is true. Like, this is the kind of person you are.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess it's just going to show that, like, I don't think Biden is showing Bernie the due respect he deserves. I think Bernie is a powerful ally to have in the Senate. I think he's a powerful ally when it comes to mobilizing people.
Yeah.
And just, you know, blindsiding him with that Nira observation. But I think it's just like, you know, the Republicans were here openly saying, like, you know, everything they wanted. And that was the reason to, you know, withdraw her nomination. And I think that's also probably, again, not to bash you for bringing up the child care thing, because I think it is something that's important, but we have to be careful when things are cynically deployed, right? I think that might have been just a way for Romney and his coalition to get on board with the relief bill. Because didn't Romney vote yes on it? I think he did, right?
No, not a single Republican in the House or Senate voted.
Yeah, and that's the
all
bullshit.
All these concessions and not a single Republican vote.
It's like, that's why, it's like, I keep seeing people talk about there's nothing you need to, like, bend over backwards for Republicans right now. You have all of the power, the Democrats. Already been like, okay, 15. Done. Now. Not later. Not eventually, but 15 right now. Let's give these checks. Let's make these checks recurring. Like, all of this. There's, you could have slid everything. They could have took a page directly from the Republicans' book, and they're just sitting there with their dicks in their hands, hoping that nobody sees that they're incompetent.
Well, speaking of sitting with your dick in your hands and being exposed as incompetent, I wanted to finally end our politics section with the news from Nevada, and how at the time I saw that article, Reed and his people didn't have a comment.
And the rest of them quit.
Yeah.
There were a bunch of staffers who
just, like, walked out, like
a fan of socialists. They quit.
They're tell Audrey we say hey. We see her in the back.
Yes.
Oh, hi.
But yeah, their bullshit was, you were gonna fire me anyway, like, so you resign automatically, like, no help, no transition, just bullshit. Maybe they realized that the unemployment was about to pass, so they can get their little extra $300.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting to me because Harry Reid was already pretty unique among Democrats in that, you know, for being a Western state and having to deal with some pretty conservative forces, he had a couple, like, left-er Democrats on his payroll. But, again, like, the way that he would compromise with donor Sheldon Adelson. And, you know, I don't think he put up enough of a fight against Mitch McConnell during the Obama years. So his tenure is a little confusing to me, right? But when it came to 2020, which is really, you know, I remember that week vividly. And it was the week that Bernie won in Nevada. And really who towed him over the line were service workers unions. You know what I mean? There was the whole thing where, like, the service union workers weren't even allowed to, like, pick a side because of the whole Bernie versus Warren shit. But ultimately people came out for Bernie, right? And when it comes to DSA and when it comes to DSA members who are Democrats, right? There needs to be some solidarity with workers, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
For crying out loud.
Yeah.
We need to show some solidarity with workers. And when Labor picks Bernie and you don't deliver, you lose these people to Trump. I mean, everyone talks about UAW workers who secretly voted for Trump, but how do you get them back into the fold?
There are UAW workers who, like, proudly voted for Trump. Right. I know people.
Because of
who,
NAFTA and, like, the TPP and all that shit. Like,
But the thing is, like, for these people, a lot of them aren't going to Republicans, like people think.
They're just not voting.
Actively not voting. And they are not only not voting, but those are the people who are telling other people not to vote and telling them, like, this shit doesn't matter. Like, nothing matters. And they're right, but they're wrong, because the more people you tell that, the more it's just ingrained that nothing matters. And then you have all elections being overtaken by old ass fuckers that aren't going to even live to see the policies they just voted for.
Right. And it's just, well,
Well, and here's the thing, the Nevada situation and what happened with the Nevada Democratic Party, the thing that really excites me, and I don't mean to just put Ryan Knight on blast, but I've seen him and a couple other people on Twitter who are talking about making these like other parties. And it's like, okay, like I understand the logic of wanting to make another party, not wanting to work with Democrats. Like I get that. But to me, what the socialists proved in Nevada is that it is possible to take a crappy, corrupt party, like corporate donor party in a state, and you just make it socialist. And then you just pump socialists out into all the elected offices. And it just, to me, the whole avenue of going with a third party is ultimately going to just take so long. And that I think what really excites me about Nevada is that it proved it was possible.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I
like,
think
I want to bring that here to Michigan.
Yeah. And I think that's the counterpoint to what I was bringing up about is electoralism effective. I think, you know, my deepest prayers and positive vibes for everyone taking the helm in Nevada, right? I hope that institutional creep doesn't get them. And I hope that they're really able to deliver for people who are hurting, right? If they can continue this as long as they can, and if, you know, this becomes a model, or even if they don't, this kind of coup within a party may be the push for people making the electoral argument to say, like, no, we can't exactly do it office by office, but if we take control of a statewide party, which in a lot of states like Michigan, they are pretty weak. They are pretty disorganized on purpose. You know, to speak about Michigan, right? Michigan is the best funded Republican Party in one of the countries. They were one of the first people to get Trump on the stage. The Romney family is a big contributor, and all the businesses that are based out of Michigan have people either on the board or like involved. And, you know, your state party is likely ripe for the taking. So I may come under fire for saying this. I might get the Pelosi letterhead delivered to my apartment. But this is my request. If you have the means to organize, steal my idea. Steal credit for it. I did not come up with this. You came up with this. Get you and like the homies who are crazy enough to take over the state apparatus. The state party apparatus, I should say.
Obama's about to come and get us.
Well, if I disappear, you guys know what happens.
We are the new Osama bin Laden. Eddie is about to come get us.
I'm excited. And I have had a couple of random phone calls with different people who are looking at Michigan's party specifically. I don't want to get too into details about it and whatnot, but I'm excited. I think Nevada is the win that the left kind of needed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know that sounds weird, but like after how 2020 went, and don't get me wrong, 2020 gave us some people I'm absolutely in love with, between Jamal Bowman, Cori Bush. I mean, mm-hmm. I love a bunch of people who got elected in 2020. But I think after what happened in the primary, the left needs something. And I think that this is a good start. I think this is, what's the phrase? Starting 2021 off right.
Right, you know? Right.
At least trying.
Right. And I think, you know, if you are of vengeful spirit, or if you're someone who's really been feeling the effect of the black pill post-Bernie, and you told yourself that there's no hope, not with that attitude. Not with that attitude.
I've been. I mean, Michigan's just an example. You know, everything I understand about the Michigan Democratic Party is if you just, the biggest thing is just socialists showing up. You know, as much as they've got their little weird rules and all the little tweaking to make it hard to pass some shit, really, all of that is overcome by just show the fuck up to the thing. Mm-hmm. Get there, vote. To be honest, it's not even like you need a ton of organization. Like, you can pretty much pick out the socialists in the room. You'll be like, okay, them. And just vote with them. Just be there and vote with them.
I'll make it super easy to pick me out. I don't know what outfit I'm going with, but I'm definitely considering a Mao suit. I'm not even that big of a China guy, but I just think it's a fire look.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
All buttons, man.
Just wear a tuxedo with any type of a color gradient. There you go. It's like going from red to blue sunset from Microsoft PowerPoint. Sorry, that's an obscure reference, but...
All right. Well, right. I think that concludes our politics portion. So a little tabloid level discussion for us, which is the royal family debacle and how it continues to be just, you know, a very fertile ground for inane opinions and commentary. And one about, you know, how the upper class, but also how the established media discusses racism. There is a real discussion to be had here when it comes to Meghan Markle and Harry exiting the royal family. And then there's the superficial one that everyone's having. So I'm going to roll the tape, so to speak.
Which tape, though?
I'm just going to roll the highlights from the fucking...
From the Oprah?
Yeah, from the Oprah interview. Please don't sue me, Oprah. I grew up watching your show. Please don't sue me.
I think with fair use, as long as the... If the clips are short enough that they're in a highlight video, they should be available for fair use, so...
Well, yeah. And anyways, you know, we're not making money off of this, Oprah.
Please don't sue us.
Please stop fracking.
Please stop fracking on your property.
Okay. Let's start the clip.
Were you silent or were you silenced?
That's one of my favorite quotes.
Okay, five key moments. Let's see what the first one is. Struggles with mental health.
Knew that if I didn't say it, that I would do it. And I just didn't want to be alive anymore. And that was a very clear and real and frightening constant thought. But we had to go to this event, and I remember him saying, I don't think you can go. And I said, I can't be left alone.
Because you were afraid of what you might do to yourself?
If you zoom in, what I see is how tightly his knuckles are gripped around mine. You can see the whites of our knuckles because we are smiling and doing our job, but we're both just trying to hold on.
Oh, the concerns over how skin.
So we have in tandem the conversation of he won't be given security. He's not going to be given a title.
I'm going to roll that back, guys. Sorry.
Just insane.
So we have in tandem the conversation of he won't be given security. He's not going to be given a title. And also concerns and conversations about how dark his skin might be when he's born.
What?
That's the meme moment.
How dark your baby is going to be?
What?
Potentially, and what that would mean to look like.
Ooh. Pause it for just like
that
1 millisecond.
That was related to me from Harry. Those were
Okay, so I think one of the big things, just referencing that specific moment from the interview, I didn't realize that Ben Shapiro was such a fan of the British Crown. Like,
really?
My goodness.
Gosh, that's disgusting.
Well, didn't he get owned by the BBC? And that's why, is that what made him a royalist?
He went out of his way, again, we live in a world where Ben Shapiro just makes fucking videos for no fucking reason, and people watch him for some fucking reason. But anyway, Ben Shapiro decides that he's going to comment on this, and then he made this really weird comment where he's like, that's not a real thing anyone would say. No one would ever actually say that. And it's like...
So many people would say that.
So many people would say that. And it's just...
I said that. I was wondering how dark the baby was going to be.
Look at Meghan Markle. Like, she looks practically Italian, right?
She does. She looks very Sicilian.
We've seen the picture of the baby. That is a white baby.
That man has a better credit score than me. Not because he's a royal. Because of the color of the skin.
Oh my god. Well, that's my thing with just out of touch people like Ben Shapiro are, is that like they won't even... Well, I don't know if he's a good example, because I'm 99% sure that he gets paid to spout out all the bullshit that he says.
Lies.
So he got paid to lie and pretend that that was a weird thing that people would ask. It's like, just insane. But sorry, you were rolling with the clip.
Yeah, let's roll with the clip.
Conversations that family had with him.
Are you taking your calls now?
Yeah. He is. There's a lot to work through there. You know, I feel really let down. because he's been through something similar. He knows what pain feels like. And this is, and Archie's his grandson.
This last one, Prince Harry felt trapped.
Trapped within the system. Like the rest of my family are. My father and my brother, they are trapped. They don't get to leave. And I have huge compassion for that.
They are in the sunken place. The white people suck in place. That's sad.
Yeah. So what's kind of like piqued my interest about this, and I'm really not the kind of person who cares for celebrity gossip or that kind of thing. Yeah. But again, growing up brown, all my brown people know this, that we had parents who were just personally invested in Princess Diana for some reason, and the impact of her undue passing. And the kind of conspiracy thinking that came with that has not exactly left the popular imagination. And especially in the wake of the Jeffrey Epstein stuff and how Prince Andrew is tied into that, has renewed a lot of that. And I like following conspiracy theories. I'm not exactly a conspiracy theorist, but the renewed angle I've been taking is the kind of link between how much of an impact or how involved was the royal family in the accident that Princess Diana was in. You know what I mean? And it comes especially in the wake of a lot of these articles in the British press, and maybe we can have a bit of a conversation on how scummy the British press is in comparison to our own scummy press, right? There's been this series of like threatening op-eds where it's like, I'm afraid Prince Harry is making the same mistakes that his mother made, and I don't want him to go down that path. Huh? Huh? Bro, what?
Oh my goodness, you want to talk about the flipping British press? I don't know if you want to finish the clip before we dive too much.
Oh no, that's it for the clip. That's it. Really.
Of Piers Morgan. And I don't understand how this human being, he quite literally himself, like, this isn't something that people accused him of. Like, he did it. He wrote a whole ass article in 2014 that basically said, I really wanted to bang Meghan Markle, but she ghosted me. So, like, I really wanted to date Meghan Markle, but she ghosted me. And I don't understand, like, because he's one of the biggest people ripping on her. And it's like, I don't understand why he's even allowed to have an opinion. When he literally admitted that he is just pissed that she wouldn't date him.
That's
and she ended up with a prince.
that's
so... I mean, he really fit in the bill on this one, right?
Like,
what a fucker. Sorry.
The fact that was the thing that caused him to like step back after all of these horrible things that he said, and like just stupid press bullshit, Perez Hilton of the British bullshit.
Right.
It's just disgusting.
But again, like, it doesn't make sense to me because everyone talks about him like he's this big wig journalist. Like, I mean, I'm sorry, Anderson Cooper is more of a journalist than this guy. That's is. Like, true. You know, Piers Morgan only makes sense because they needed a British guy for like the 24-hour live stream that is CNN. But, you know, fundamentally, I mean, there's compilations of this guy getting owned. By every guest, other CNN correspondents. I mean,
apparently by Meghan Markle.
If you've ever seen oh no, let's play the clip of him getting owned by Alex Jones, the Alex Jones Piers Morgan clip.
Like, first of all, especially if you think about the fact that like she's with Prince Harry, one of like the most attractive born royal, like, period. Yeah. There's never been more than one that's more attractive, at least in modern time. I couldn't tell before all of the incest, but like, he's the most attractive one, and this man is disgusting.
Oh yeah, when I first saw a picture of the guy,
he just looks
like, he looks like someone who'd be upset that someone ghosted him 7 years ago and is still trying to get revenge.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, imagine being so sad.
Again, like, guys do that stuff when they're like 12 and it's not cool then.
It's not. It's
being it is, so it big. Is straight up one of the creepiest. And the fact that any time that he opens his mouth to talk about this situation, that that's not the first thing that gets brought up. I mean, obviously, there's so many different aspects of the shitty aspects of our culture that are being revealed in this whole situation, but just the sheer gall that places like CNN, the people who are interviewing him, the fact that he's even given a platform mm-hmm. after he went out of his way to admit that he is just upset because she didn't want to date him.
Well, it's like why does he have any credibility? Disgusting. Like we have to defend
exactly. People because he's the only guy that had the guns. So we did.
I'm trying to find the fucking clip of him like roasting Piers Morgan. Let me see.
All the guns.
Let me try exactly.
But
my
you've
point.
Got hordes of people burning.
You said hundreds.
It's very low. It doesn't kill people.
Do you want
they're not
going to
pull on America's heartstrings.
Okay.
They
no.
know your script. Okay.
Not working. I'm sorry,
you
guys.
Might wanna be, okay. You might want to be careful with this one because you don't want to accidentally make Alex Jones sound like anything other than a human.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Who's better?
I might edit that out, or otherwise, you know.
Satan or the devil.
Otherwise, I will be held accountable by the audience for, you
if
know.
If you want, I can play some copyright music, give you something to really
well okay so the whole thing I was trying to find was there's this clip of him like in the debate with Alex Jones and it's going nowhere yeah. but then Alex Jones just puts on this horrible British accent and just like yes I'm Piers Morgan and if I speak like this anyone believes anything I say but that's why he got hired. And again, I think the pettiness, the cattiness, and you know how the British Empire is finally being brought down by an actress from the USA Network is, you know, it's either a sign of our cultural decay or it's just, it's proof that the press can not only, you know, hold its own when it comes to political affairs. We can talk about that, how CNN held all those Trump events live on their feeds. And it kind of gave him a following. Mm-hmm. But then even when it comes to the pettier stuff that they're good at, like gossip journalism, they can't even hold their fucking nose and like power through the interview. They can't even do that.
Yep.
So yep. To a point, you know, I salute Meghan Markle for her service. she has done things that many anti-colonial revolutionaries have not been able to do in the past. Something that I also find a little interesting about the discourse, so to speak, that's been happening about the royal family debacle. It's just how many people have performatively said to the extent, I just can't believe the royal family was this racist.
Oh, God.
And
bless
fucking Williams being like, my family isn't racist. We just own people. What?
Never. Honestly. I think, and you know, I do kind of got to go in like 10 minutes, so not to sound like I'm
We can wrap this up.
One thing that I think is really interesting, and whether it's this situation with Meghan Markle, whether it's what we were discussing earlier with like the discourse around the aid package and stuff, the $15 minimum wage, it is really refreshing to like come on a podcast, to talk to like regular people, and realize that there's just two completely different worlds here. Mm-hmm. Like, to regular people like us, a lot of this stuff is just a slam dunk. Like, as soon as you understand the situation, like, I say to any regular person, oh yeah, Piers Morgan admitted that he wanted to sleep with Meghan Markle, like, 7 years ago, and she ghosted him, and now he's bashing her, blah, blah, and, like, that's the only reason he cares. Regular people are like, oh yeah, fuck, why are we listening to him? But then there's these weird,
these media
this
addicted,
other group.
Highly online and media addicted people who not only like
yeah.
follow this stuff religiously, but also like think these people doing the reporting need to also be respected like they're the royals themselves. They look at like this critique of Piers Morgan and they're like, well, that's very mean. Or even like Shapiro and Steven Crowder and, you know, these again, they're trying to fight for relevancy. That's why they came on the scene. But you know, even when working people and very marginalized communities come out, like BLM did last summer, and they're not taken seriously, it hurts. But then it's also fascinating to see that even on higher class lines, the insinuation that someone was treated unfairly is also not taken seriously. I mean, it's just proof that the monarchy is stupid. Our press is kind of stupid. The governments that they support are also a little stupid. And this whole thing is it's long overdue for an overhaul.
Yeah, honestly. I think it's going to happen, honestly.
Inshallah.
I think it's going to...
I mean, Barbados is already removing the queen from the head of state, so that's one less colony they're going to have. Fuck them.
Where? I'm sorry.
Barbados.
Barbados? Oh, dope. Honestly, and like, this just ties into the British thing and kind of all the different topics we touched on. I think a lot of these things, it really is just a matter of time. Yeah. I think the ball is rolling. You've got wonderful people like Stacey Abrams and different groups that are just getting people into the system. And once they're in the system, like, that's when change is going to start happening. Now that we're all growing up, we're all going to become like the base regular consumer. The news will stop drowning on and on about the royals because we all don't give a shit, right? Like, I haven't met a millennial who gives two shits about the British royal family. Maybe not a millennial. What's below
Gen Z?
I do love Princess Diana, but I'm not Gen Z.
I am old. Fair enough. And to be fair, we're also not British, so who knows?
That's true.
British?
What?
Well, so Tyler's provided some closing thoughts. Guy, do you have any closing thoughts?
I think it's just really funny that if you do like Princess Diana and, or if you know, like, just about, like, the 90s and the shit, like, this is almost exactly what was going on. And they're just being like, hey, we experienced this. And they knew, everyone knew what Diana went through. There's been documentaries and, like, The Crown. Everything has been coming out and saying, Diana was treated horribly, and this is all the shit, and it's because she was a part of the royal family and their bullshit. And then people are still like, no, that didn't happen. Like, why wouldn't it happen to a black woman who's American when it happened to a middle-class white woman who was literally bred to be an option for a royal?
I think, you know... Yep. To sum this up nicely, I think if you've been watching The Crown or if you've been listening to some of the conspiracy theories, the royal family is kind of a refined Kardashians to an extent. It is a fantasy to sell to common people about the lives of the rich and the privileged. And it's a thing to keep people in line. It's a thing to keep people away from questioning. It's a way to get people away from thinking dialectically, right?
Mm-hmm.
And with... However superficial you could say Princess Diana and Meghan Markle are, they do open the door to the idea of class stratification, the idea of pluralism in societies. And ultimately, it points at the question of should there even be a royal family? And these are the kinds of things that are threats to power. And whether or not you believe that there was a hand in Diana's death, you can definitely believe that there was a hand in how she was treated while she was alive.
Right.
And how she was mistreated by her husband and by the royal family. And we can see it again with Meghan and Harry. And even though I don't sympathize with them because they are rather wealthy and privileged, it goes to show that, like, this is a fundamentally diseased society.
But that should also show you that, like, there's... still racism for the rich people. Like, you can be like married to a royal who has a title but like will never get power, and like there will still be all of this up in arms about the fact that you're fucking half black. Like, it's ridiculous. And that should be the solidarity of like, this shit isn't working. It's not working.
Well, I think, again, ultimately it's part of a long cycle in history of who gets to inherit power and prestige.
Mm-hmm.
And even though America's upper class seems to be somewhat more intersectional than Britain's, Britons. It goes to show that racism is not wholly sanitized away from class in the same way sexism is not wholly sanitized from race. I don't like this idea that intersectionality needs to be separate from a class analysis or Marxism. In fact, all these map on very nicely. And, you know, as banal as this culture war aberration in our podcast has been, I think it should be some food for thought on this subject when it comes to how we perceive race, how we perceive class, and how not everything exists in a solid state. Things are more so on a ever-flowing, continual spectrum that needs to be understood holistically. And I'll stop with the big words there.
I agree.
Again, so I'm probably going to close out with a brief digression on what I call capybara mindset. A lot of, you know, I'm just making fun of, who's that? Whatever, he's not worth mentioning. But I think if anyone remembers gorilla mindset, and how I think a lot of people try to model human behavior off of animals, I think we, as leftists and as socialists or anarchists, we all share that idea of a collective and solidarity-based movement that's inclusive, that backs one another up. And if we're supposed to be modeling our behavior after animals, I don't think we need to necessarily follow primates. I don't think we need to follow lions. I think the whole thing with alpha and beta males with wolves doesn't make sense. What I think makes sense is the capybara that lives in very big groups, all of which look after one another, and all of which even have interspecies friendships and are content to vibe and swim. Like the capybara, I too think the future of mankind is not one of sorrow, not one of misery, but one of friendship and one of vibes.
That's the dream.
That is the dream indeed.
We all just want friendship and vibes.
All right. Tyler, anything you'd like to plug?
I guess at this point in time, all I would throw out there is that there are several special elections coming up. I, for one, am a fan of Nina Turner and Gary Chambers running in Ohio and Louisiana, respectively. If anybody listening has the time, they have a little bit of money they can donate, have some time to do phone calls, please consider doing so. They're both wonderful candidates with great ideas. So, yeah, that's all I would plug.
I would like to plug Fox Family Flames, one of the best candle companies. The blueberry cheesecake candle is one of my favorite things I've ever smelled in my life. So pick up your candles from Fox Family Flames.
Tyler, you got the link for the website?
www.foxfamilyflames.com.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yep. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah. You can follow our guests on Twitter. You can follow Tyler at?
I am at Chairman... Oh, God bless. What is my Twitter?
I'm going to look it up real quick.
It's at Roguish Lifestyle. I don't, honestly, I just retweet stuff. I never tweet my own opinions, so I don't pay much attention to me.
Well, you retweet some good stuff every now and then.
It's at Chairman, H-A-D as in dog, R-I-L-L, at Chairman Hadrill.
All right. So. Sky, where can people follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Moonslut69. I mostly also retweet. You don't want to catch me on a Twitter, like, you don't want to catch me going at it, because if I'm on Twitter talking about my opinions, that means I just try to not beat someone's ass. So,
all right, you can follow me at Fibonacci Sniper on Twitter. It is a tribute to one of Matt Christman's greatest Kush vlogs.
Okay.
That is Fibonacci as in the mathematician and Sniper as in the class in Team Fortress.
That was a mathematician. I learned something
today. I get that.
You can also follow the show on Twitter at Pod Greenhouse. That was the only way we could get it. Perfect. You can also look us up on Facebook if that works better. Those are the only two social media platforms we're on. I will share all the links as the video is uploaded. I'm going to upload tonight. But thanks again to our 2, 10, 40 subscribers. We're at about roughly 40 people on YouTube right now. So thanks to everyone who subscribed. And thanks to everyone who's been consistently listening. This has been, you know, a bit of an interesting project because it's been hard to stay consistent. But you guys have helped me build a platform, and I'm very grateful for that. And I want to give that back by getting a more consistent release schedule and some guests. So more to follow on that, and you can definitely check our social media for that. And as always, continue to listen to our show on all places where good podcasts are found. Anyways, this is Adi signing off. Take care, guys.